Welcome back to Assessment Joining the Dots, our monthly podcast covering all things assessment. Thank you so much for supporting us and for tuning in to listen to episode number 6. We are, of course, GL Assessment or GL Education, depending on where you are in the world. And we're the leading provider of formative standardised assessments in the UK and Ireland. And we also work with schools in over 100 countries worldwide. The reason that we're doing this podcast is because we are passionate about supporting all of you to make the best use of the insights from data, whether that's to inform teaching and learning strategy or to help guide personalised learning decisions. We are here for you. If you've listened to our previous episodes, then you'll be familiar with our reoccurring segments, including our lightbulb moments and our data spotlights, where we aim to demystify commonly used terminology within the wide world of standardised assessment data. So whether you're using our assessments or not, if you feel like you could do with knowing a bit more about assessment in general, we do hope that this podcast is for you. I'm Sadie Clayton. I'm part of the customer experience team here at GL. We're a team of former teachers who focus on improving the experience of using our assessments from the very start. Through avenues such as our online training, webinars, consultations, and general support, to name a few, our aim is to help anyone involved in using our assessments in schools to get the most out of their data and ultimately to impact on teaching and learning so pupils can get the most out of their assessments too. We want to enable our customers to not just be data rich, but also data informed to support learners to achieve their very best. Today, our focus is the whole pupil view, which is a model which explains how using data triangulation is key in helping educators fully understand their learners. The whole pupil view is something which is very close to our hearts at GL, as the concept itself puts the child at the centre of the data. And let's be honest, that's why we do what we do. Now, we're adding a slight twist to our usual format this episode, and we're actually going to kick the episode off with our data spotlight. So here's Georgina and James shining light on the whole pupil view and the power of data triangulation.
So this episode is about the whole pupil view. So it might be quite helpful for us to explain that before we continue. So the whole pupil view is really about understanding the whole child. We got into teaching to support young people's minds and develop and nurture that whole child, didn't we? We didn't get into teaching with the sole purpose of teaching children to pass exams. So when we talk about the whole pupil view at GL, we are really thinking about making sure that we give young people the best life chances. We are looking at then understanding their potential, understanding how they feel about their learning, as well as understanding how they perform in an assessment.
Exactly that. And an important part of understanding the whole pupil view is about how various pieces of data work together. And that's about data triangulation. So if we unpick that term, first of all, before we move on, data triangulation simply means comparing two or more sets of data to help us reach informed conclusions. Now, there's no shortage of data in schools. We know that that could come in the form of assessment results, teacher observations, conversations with parents, attendance percentages, etc. And at GL, we base our whole pupil view on data points that are taken from our own assessments and very much hope that that is combined with other contextual data in school. So for our whole pupil view, just to refer back to what you were talking about, Georgina, we talk about potential, attainment on tests, and then feelings about school as well. So for us, those data points come from assessments like CAT4, the cognitive abilities test. That gives an insight into a learner's potential, which might be independent from skills and knowledge that they've actually been explicitly taught in their lessons. So that's the first point. A second data point from an attainment test, from the progress test in maths, for example, that gives teachers a much better idea of the kind of curriculum knowledge and skills that the learner has been explicitly taught in their maths lessons and has retained. And then a third data point around feelings about school could come from an attitudinal measure like the pupil attitudes to self and school survey or the PASS survey. And that lets us know what kind of barriers to success the pupils might be facing that are outside of the classroom. So social and emotional well-being, for example. And as I mentioned, each of these data points from an assessment can give one piece of the overall puzzle. But the beauty of it is when you bring all of them together and then put them in context with everything else we know about the student. And it really needs a teacher to do that. It needs a teacher to apply their professional judgment to data points from standardized assessments, data from what else you have in school, before then deciding on the best next steps to help that child be successful. or that's the theory anyway. And Georgina, I wonder if you've got an example of how that might work in practice.
Yeah, I definitely can. I can think of a really good example, actually, with a girl that I used to teach called Annie. And when she came to us in year seven, so just for context, I was a reading lead across a large secondary school. And when Annie came to us, she was doing really well. She had good SATs results. Her first new group reading test or NGRT test results were really good. Her English teacher said she was doing really well in that. Her CAT 4 results, her verbal result was good. So, you know, there was no problem. And she then hit year 8, probably hormones hit as well. But she took the new group reading test again and it looked like her reading was going backwards. And when I spoke to her English teacher, her results were dipping there as well. So it took thinking about her as a whole child and triangulating the data, as you just spoke about, James, to really understand what was going on. So what we did was we spoke to mum. And we said, you know, we've had this data picture, we can see what's going on, you know, how was she feeling? And she said the same kind of thing, that Annie was struggling at home. She wasn't really engaging with homework. She wasn't reading, which was unusual for her because she used to really love reading at primary school and she used to be really good at doing homework. And when I looked at the PASS survey, and you mentioned PASS, James, I love PASS because what that really does is allow us to think about and see how a child feels about themselves as learners and how they're coping. And Annie's PASS results flagged this area of confidence had dipped. So between year 7 and 8, her confidence levels, her self-efficacy was much lower. And so when we spoke to Annie, she was really eloquent, actually. She understood that as well. She realised that her texts were much harder in secondary school, that the lessons and the content was more difficult. She was going from lesson to lesson, so she had more teachers to deal with. So the data triangulation and that whole pupil view and speaking to Annie really helped her expose the problem. And when we worked with her confidence, when we worked with teachers to understand what was going on so that they could check in on her, they could make sure she understood what was being asked of her, the data rose, the test results rose. But more importantly than that, Annie's confidence rose. And that's the most important thing for us, isn't it? Making sure that children feel that they are understood and they're fully supported so they can do their best at school.
As Georgina and James so brilliantly put, we know how important it is to understand the needs of pupils as a whole. And we're really excited today to head over to an interview with someone who is doing just that. So for this episode, we're joined by Laura Stansfield, Primary Group Curriculum and Assessment Coordinator. We had the privilege of meeting with Laura last year, where she was able to showcase the power of combining different data sets to uncover that all-important whole pupil view. Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for joining us today. And it's lovely to meet with you again. Could you, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and also your role within the Braeburn School Group?
Yep, sure. Hi, and thank you for this opportunity. A little bit about myself then. I've been working in schools now for 13 years, most of which have been in an international setting. I moved to East Africa for a two-year adventure, and 11 years later, I'm still here. I had trained as a secondary teacher, but ever since leaving university, I've been in primary. I've had many opportunities within the Braeburn Group. When I started as a class teacher, then I had the opportunity to be a middle leader, subject lead, assistant head teacher. And just now with the growth of the group, this opportunity came up a year ago to take on a role of being the primary curriculum and assessment coordinator. And so basically, I move around the 11 schools within the group, look at how I can support staff development, look at what areas we're developing as a whole in the curriculum. And obviously, a part of that then is the data and our use of GL. Very privileged to be in the role, although it's a bit different from being in the classroom. I'm definitely getting a lot of opportunities now to dig deep into data, which when I was assistant head teacher, I didn't quite have the time to do it at the level I'm doing it now. But it is a great opportunity then to work with SLT among the group, looking at triangulating data mostly has been our focus for the last year for the primary setting.
That's great. Thank you, Laura. Now, as I've already mentioned in my intro, we had the privilege of meeting a number of staff members from the Braeburn School Group last year in Kenya. And I have to say, we were utterly blown away by the robust assessment strategy that you've created there. So, as the focus for today is the whole pupil view, could you give us a bit of an insight into the types of data triangulation that you and your school do, and also reflect on why this is perhaps so important in helping you to understand your learners so well?
Yep, sure. So one of our kind of starting points about 2 years ago was aligning the group with when we're doing assessments, as that became really important when we start to analyse the data. So we have a schedule where years 3, 5, and 7 and any new children joining will sit their CAT 4 within the first half term of the academic year. And then we chose then to sit our pass around week 9, 10 of term 1. Again, we felt that children had settled into their class, their year group, and we were getting more useful data from that. So normally by the end of term 1, then we would expect schools then to be triangulating that data, mostly starting with our CAT 4 main SAS. And then we look at kind of lower factors in the pass that's coming out, and that's where we would start then our triangulation. And from that, we have been able then to act on so many cases already. Every year we learn something new. And I think what's really important for a primary setting is mostly we're with our class 2/3 of the time. And so contextualizing that data is very effective. And so teachers will know already a bit about why certain students are failing a certain way or what potential barriers might already be there that they know about. But often we always do have 2 or 3 surprises as well, which then we then have now got a structure in place on what next steps we would take there.
That's great. Thank you. And I think you've said something that's really pertinent and certainly a message that we communicate with the schools that we work with, which is how important that teacher judgment is alongside all of that data triangulation and standardized assessment data. Now, creating such a solid approach to data triangulation does take time. And for anyone that's listening that perhaps is at the beginning of this journey with data triangulation, what would be your top tips to get started with such a robust approach like this?
Yeah, I think I was at a very good opportunity in the sense that our secondary group had started it before the primary, which obviously helped us a lot. Lee Hill and Simon Moffat played a great role in that and setting up spreadsheets, etc., that we were able then to look at and see how we could use in primary. But I think for myself, what I've learned along the way is the importance of having clean data on the system and maintaining that every year. And I guess what I mean by clean data is making sure that the student information is accurate, up to date, they're in the correct year group, schools are recording year groups and gender, etc., in the same way. And that way it made it easier to pull the data to begin with, because that could take time then when it's in different formats. And I guess then again, for us in primary, we started small. So before we even really went into triangulating lots of data, we identified certain year groups. So, for example, in some schools, we start with year 3 because it's a transitional year. It's the first time we have CAT 4 data. It's the first time we can get PASS where they understand the questions a little bit more. Although we have used PASS lower down the school, we kind of felt that whenever we were talking to the students, they misunderstood some of the questions. So year 3 was a good starting point for us. And then just as and when teachers got used to that, we were able then to bring in other year groups. And like you've already mentioned, training was really important before we started. And I think too, whenever I was in the assistant head teacher position, I did a lot of the data triangulation for the school and realized that I wasn't really empowering our teachers. So it's great now that we can have access to online training or in-person training. So throughout the last 2-3 years now, we've been using year leaders, subject leads, etc., more in those data analysis progress meetings to make sure that they're also then being upskilled in what we're doing with that triangulation. And I think too, for especially when it comes to triangulating CAT 4 and PASS, is try not to triangulate everything because it becomes very overwhelming. I think I took from another podcast or somewhere on the site about being data rich to data wise. And it was something that we were quite aware of, that we had a lot of data, but what we were actually doing with it may not have been as impactful. Whereas now we're just choosing to triangulate 2 or 3 factors that come out as a concern in each school.
That's great, Laura. And again, I think, like you said, training is really vital to any assessment strategy. So the fact that that's really kind of propelling that robust assessment strategy that you've set up is really key, isn't it? So I think you've kind of tinkled a little bit about this already, but I think it will be important to ask given the context. So we ask schools to get in touch with their light bulb moments, those key moments from the data where they've maybe revealed some of those surprises. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, Laura. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
Could you share with us your own light bulb moment with the data, perhaps a particular example where triangulating the data led to a key insight for a student?
Yeah, like I say, I think we're in quite a good position with primary where we are mostly working with the same class. So like I said, we don't normally have a lot of shocking cases, but now and again, there are a few surprises where you go, oh, I wonder why they're feeling that way. Thinking off the top of my head, a few cases we've had recently in term one where we triangulated, and I think it was self-regard as a learner came out low in general. And so whenever we triangulated that against the CAP for SAS, there was a student in particular who had a very high CAP, mean SAS, I believe it was 131, but their self-regard was as a learner was one of the lowest in the year group. So that stood out a lot. And we were kind of thinking, oh, that's interesting. And so our first step to any kind of approach is we speak to the child and get them to identify an adult who they would like to talk to, whether it is their class teacher, another teacher, counselor, etc. And then also using the toolkits on the dashboard is very useful to guide those discussions because it does give you some questions to kind of ask the student. And what really came from that discussion with the child was their perception was that they were always being challenged or in class were always given the hardest tasks to do. Or when they finished that, they were then given extension activities to do. And his perception was that, you know, he was always given more and more and more. And he felt then that he wasn't quite coping with that. And it was the same. He also identified that when he was put in group work or group situations, he was always put to almost be the leader and to do the work for the others. And so that started really impacting how he was feeling about himself. And he just had this kind of feeling that I'm always given more work to do. And that's not what I've come to school for. And so it was really interesting, and the teachers all took that on board. And then we've recently introduced our kind of whole school teach the top approach, and where we're not targeting and extending those, but setting the standards high for all. And so we've had to bring in some changes for that. And then obviously we keep checking in and then put an intervention in place. They redid the pass, and then his self-regard as a learner did rise from that. So, but again, as a teacher, we don't think we would have noticed that had we have not triangulated the data. We just assumed he was a high able student and was performing well and was happy at school.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's a message again, isn't it? That, you know, children are closed books sometimes. They're not always feeling how they present themselves to teachers. So that's a really, really fantastic example, Lauren. Thank you so much for sharing. So just to kind of reflect on some of the things that Laura spoke about there, obviously the PASS is our pupil attitudes to self in school, and it will give you an insight into social and emotional aspects of learning. And the CAP4 there is obviously our cognitive abilities test, which will outline a student's potential. The SAS or SAS is the standard age score. So the standard age score is basically the student's raw score within an assessment, simply put, how many points or marks they achieved. That's then adjusted based on their exact chronological age and placed on a scale that makes that comparison to the robust standardization sample. So Laura, you're doing fantastic things with using that standard age score. That's definitely what we would advocate to schools, because it is the fairest way to make comparisons to other schools and also to track those changes across time. So it's great that you're obviously using that overall mean standard age score from the CAP4, our cognitive abilities test, against those PASS factors. And certainly by comparing those two factors there, we're really looking at identifying those fragile learners, you know, those learners who feeling pretty low about themselves as learners and actually have really high capabilities. Or on the flip side of that, those students that, you know, do have low abilities, but also are feeling slightly rubbish about themselves. So it's great that you've identified those students, and it's fantastic that you've obviously got things in place going forward as to how they can best be supported. So thank you so much for sharing that and bringing that to light. So just going forward, Laura, with the data, kind of what's on your radar for the future in terms of priorities within this school?
Yep. So in terms of the triangulation, I feel that we're in a good position that teachers have the training and understanding now to identify those at risk and are good then with interventions and reassessing. Also with that, the quad B are kind of high ability and high motivation as well. We have the teach the top approach, and that's all going very well. Something that is standing out to us and we're noticing as a trend now across the group is the quad C, where we have children who have a lower CAP4 mean SAS, and they also have low self-regard as a learner. And what we are aware of is a lot of those children are already on our inclusion registers. So they have been identified through other assessments as well as CAT4 and progress tests, etc., that they may have barriers to their learning. And so how that's affecting how they're feeling now is coming across very evident in our data. And so something we are aware of, especially as they get older, they're feeling that pull in and push out support and that adult support in class, and they're now more aware and it's impacting that. And what we're trying to avoid is that attitude and feeling also becoming an additional barrier to what they may already have in terms of their learning needs. And so it's something we have identified. It's, like I said, it's a group trend, and it will be something that we'll be planning and mapping out now with our inclusion leads across the group as to what we can do to make sure we're not adding barriers and using this data then to make those informed decisions moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you, Laura. And I guess a big part of that going forward will be about the kind of freedom of data in within the school setting, right? Kind of how you're bringing all of that data together. Because I know when I was, you know, in class as a class teacher, sometimes you would have a conversation with another member of staff and they would bring something to the table that maybe you weren't aware of. So kind of how freely is that data shared amongst staff members, and how often do you get together to discuss it?
Yeah, so now that all teachers have access to the dashboards, teachers can access the data for CAT4 progress tests and the past data. And as school structures are different, we do have what's called progress meetings where as many teachers as possible that are working with the children are involved in those discussions, so that whenever we're making decisions about interventions, whenever we're looking at the toolkit together and deciding what steps to take next, it is a team approach and not one teacher making a decision on that. And also with the dashboard as well, and that kind of tool now that can pull the progress test in your CAT4 so you can check that children are making expected progress has also been very useful and is used more by our class teachers this year than it has been previously.
That's so amazing to hear, Laura, and I'm so glad that, you know, you've got that accessible place to look at all of that data to really make those conversations with staff members really impactful for the students and learners, because at the end of the day, that's why we do what we do, isn't it? So thank you so much for sharing all of that wonderful information about how you're doing data triangulation. And like I said, when we came to visit you, we walked away from those training sessions thinking, wow, you know, this school and this group of schools are really on it with the data. So thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you.
Now, we've been utterly spoilt in this episode and already heard lightbulb moments from Laura and Georgina, but now it's time to head over and hear from our listeners. What was the moment you realised the power of assessment data, and what was the impact of that realisation on your learners' experience? Our lightbulb moments allow us to share these crucial turning points with data. We absolutely love hearing about all of the fantastic things that schools are doing with standardised assessment data and how these are impacting the learners that you teach. This month, we give a huge thanks to John Law at Kingsdown School for sharing their story.
So my name is John Law. I'm assistant head teacher at Kingsdown School, and I've had my first experience of using GL assessment this current academic year. I have to say a light bulb moment for me was, because it's the first time I've used it this year, there's all sorts of different acronyms to get used to and different tests to get used to for different ages. But a real light bulb moment for me was when I had a consultation with another employee of GL Assessment. She could not have been more helpful in providing me with her time and allowing me to ask any questions that I needed just to get my head around really understanding the process behind it. She showed me an example of a report analysis that GL pull off and took me through all of the key points that were extrapolated from it. And that was when the penny really dropped, I have to say. I came away understanding different acronyms a lot better. I had a much better understanding of how to go about analysing the enormous amounts of data that is available to us from these GL assessments. And we've since got stronger and stronger at using it at our school. We've been able to really pull together some really robust analysis for a lot of different year groups on various different types of testing and triangulate it up to put really impactful measures in place for the students that we've assessed.
So to get involved and share your own lightbulb moment, all you need to do is send us a WhatsApp voice note with your contribution to 07917 516 515. Again, a big thank you to those of you that have sent voice notes in so far. We've absolutely loved listening back to these, and we really do look forward to sharing more next time. Thanks for joining us for our Assessment Joining the Dots podcast. For those of you specifically interested in the whole pupil view, you may wish to check out our online on-demand data triangulation training, which is available on our support site. The address for that is support.gl-assessment.co.uk or support.gl-education.com. We're thrilled to announce that a number of our on-demand online training videos now come with CPD accreditation. So after finishing our free online training videos, you can now follow the in-video instructions to receive your CPD certificate, showcasing the time, effort, and commitment that you've put in to completing your CPD accredited training. We also encourage you to read our wide selection of case studies, again available on our website, that showcase some of the fantastic things that schools are doing with triangulating GL data. You can, of course, tweet us using the handle @GL_assessment or @GL_education, again, depending on where you are in the world. And please do email us if you'd like to know more or contribute. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. The email address for that is podcast@gl-assessment.co.uk. Please do follow and rate our podcast, share with your friends and colleagues, and subscribe to be notified when new episodes are available. Join us next time, where we'll be joining the dots on the process of developing standardised tests. Thanks for listening.